Hi, I'm Gil Headley, and I'm the proud sponsor of the Anatomy and Movement Channel. Welcome. This conference is important. It's both groundbreaking and ground-building. Literally hundreds of thousands of us have gathered here to expand our experience of embodiment, and in so doing, evolve the embodied experience of our world. Embodiment is a practice that anchors us consciously into that which is common to us all, our human body. Regardless of our differences, and we have them, we all live out our lives in a body, and we're all connected by that shared experience. I've been developing integral anatomy for the past 25 years. I believe the human body is not a problem to be solved, but rather a gift to be received and explored. Integral anatomy is an approach to understanding the whole body, which emphasizes textural layers, continuities, and relationships. We notice differences not to create separation, but to appreciate that which unites us all. I'll be presenting here on the Anatomy and Movement Channel, as well as on the main stage, and I hope you'll join me to explore the heart of inner space. And for further study with me, check out my website, gilheadley.com. When you join my site, you'll automatically receive 3 free full-length courses because I'm on a mission to share what I've learned through my own deep exploration of the human form. And I'm certain that these courses will enhance and transform your own embodiment practice. I hope you enjoy the presentation.
And so introducing our speaker for this talk, Carl Rapke, who is an embodiment teacher, Feldenkrais, and structural integration practitioner living in Salt Lake City, Utah, USA. He and his wife, Erin, host the Embodiment Matters podcast. So looking forward to your talk and sharing with us, Carl. Thank you.
Well, thank you, David. And it's so wonderful to see Gil for the introduction. And, I'm just reminded of the extraordinariness of this gathering. And for myself, it feels like so many circles of, the Feldenkrais world and the Rolfing structural integration world and embodiment world and ecology, natural movement, like how so many circles of my life have come together for this gathering. So I'm grateful to be here. And I just want to acknowledge the streams and the many lineages that are flowing into all the presenters who are here. And I just want to give you a welcome and wish you all well wherever you are around the world. And whether you're tuning in right now, whether you're coming across the recordings in a couple of years, to really imagine that we're in the same room together. There's something that is quite remarkable about this Zoom technology and the ability to be in a coherent container together. So I'm glad to have you here. And I know there are thousands of presentations going on in these days. And I want to encourage you for this presentation to just really give yourself your wholehearted attention, if it's possible to, not be scrolling on Facebook or doing other things, but to, give yourself the luxury of being fully here for the hour, whether you're doing it as a recording or doing it live now. And I think it's true with so many of these presentations. We can have a concept of some embodied principle and be like, oh yeah, I know that, but it's so important to come to each of these presentations with a beginner's mind so that the discoveries and insights are living and fresh. So I wanna say a little bit about how this hour will unfold. I'm going to talk for a little bit and have little interspersed guided practices and explorations. And then we'll take a little pause for some Q&As. And then I wanna go into a movement lesson, a Feldenkrais movement lesson. So you can be, you just need a little space to lie down on the floor. And if you're on a train or something listening, you can also do that part in your imagination or circle back to it at another point. And then we'll come back and have some more Q&A at the end. So for now, I'd like to start us by dropping in a little bit. So Come to a seated position, and I'll invite you to close your eyes for a moment, and then take your right hand and just bring it under your right sit bone, your right ischium, so you can let the weight of your pelvis drop down into your hand, and the closing of the eyes can help to drop attention downward. And take your left hand and just place it on the front of your lower abdomen, on the front of the hara. And just feel how generously you could release your weight down into your fingers to feel that living support of the earth and to feel that, you know, the bony density of your pelvis. And you can do just a gentle little rocking back and forth in your pelvis, feeling how the weight will roll forward onto your fingers and back. The more generously we can yield our weight down, the more generously we can feel that support, that living support of the ground underneath. So you can imagine that any tension that's held in the head, in the shoulders, in the chest, all could kind of gently rain down so that there's a kind of bottom heaviness. And then just slide your right hand out and notice just from that few moments of presence with your fingers on your sit bones, if there's a difference in how the two sides of your pelvis are resting, there's a difference in how your right and left sides are. And then switch your hands, lean your weight to your right sit bone, slide your left hand under, and you know, find that bone, that ischial tuberosity down there. And with your right hand, cup the front of your lower abdomen, and just do a gentle rocking. And could you imagine really sensing yourself from that space that your hands are framing out so that you could hear my voice from down in the hara, from that connection with the earth, just feeling the weight of your left hand, the weight of the pelvis rolling forward and back in your left hand. And then slide your left hand out and just rest both hands on your lower abdomen. I want to read this great quote to begin from Reggie Ray and see if you can take this in from your lower belly. There is a new wilderness, a new unknown and limitless territory, I do believe, that has not been and cannot be colonized and domesticated by human ambition and greed, that in its true extent cannot be mapped by any human logic at all. This is the forest of the human body. This body is our jungle, our outlandish expanse in which we are invited to let go of everything we think and allow ourselves to be stripped down to our most irreducible person. And then just let your hands rest, let your eyes open. And welcome again. And just feel if it feels different at all to be here after spending a little bit of time with your hands on your sit bones, your attention going down to your lower abdomen. You know, I think one of the benefits of this kind of paradox of doing an embodiment conference online is that we are in an age where we interact with devices quite often, and we tend to interact with them in a disembodied way, sort of visually up in the head. But when we can grow our capacity to feel the support of the ground, to be inhabiting our abdomen as we're interacting, it's a good skill to cultivate. So I want to read a couple little pieces to start us off on this theme of embodiment and animism. And this is from Mary Oliver, one of the most exquisite models of living and appreciating and praising a living world. So it's some things, say the wise ones. Some things, say the wise ones who know everything, are not living. I say, you live your life and leave me alone. For I have talked with the faint clouds in the sky when they are afraid of being behind. And I've said, hurry, hurry. And they say, thank you, we are hurrying. About cows and starfish and roses, there is no argument. They die after all. But water is a question. So many living things in it, but what is it itself, living or not? Oh, gleaming generosity, how could they write you out? As I think this, I am sitting on the sand beside a harbor. I am holding in my hand small pieces of granite, pyrite, and schist, each one just now, so thoroughly asleep. And then this little passage from Terry Tempest Williams, where she says, the eyes of the future are looking back at us, and they are praying for us to see beyond our time. They are kneeling with hands clasped, that we might act with restraint, that we might leave room for the life that is destined to come. To protect what is wild is to protect what is gentle. Perhaps the wilderness we fear is the pause between our own heartbeats, the silent space that says we live only by grace. Wilderness lives by the same grace. Wild mercy is in our hands. So I wanted to bring this topic to the Embodiment Conference this year, and that Terry Tempest Williams quote really gets me, the sense of, you know, what the future is praying for us to inhabit the world in a different way. And I think that this event, that, you know, 500,000 people are gathered with the interest of embodiment, with the interest of not having the body as an object to be manipulated by the head. There's a kind of tipping point that I think a lot of people feel. And I think there's also another tipping point that extends beyond this body to the larger body and the way that we're in relationship with the living world. And I think, you know, the way that we can be in the intelligence of the head and that analysis and teasing apart and objectifying the body is the same way that we can objectify the rivers and the trees and the way to come back into relationship with our embodiment and our movement also opens the door to coming back into a felt relationship with the canyons we walk through, with the water we're drinking, with, I mean, I'm just looking out of this window right now with this exquisite, these fall leaves, and that's part of my body as I'm speaking right now. So let me take a little sip. I find it helpful to, you know, look at the timeline of human history, and you know, there are many different images, like a 100-foot long rope, and the last 2 inches is from when agriculture came in, and the last half inch is the Industrial Revolution. The last little microfiber is this wild world of technology. Another way to think of it is just in generations, that for 200,000 generations of upright humans interacting with our movement, with the living world, and then just 600 generations back to the advent of agriculture and the shifts that occurred with agriculture and civilizations, and then just 60 generations to the Industrial Revolution. And, you know, again, this speck of one generation from, you know, iPhones and computers, and how much has changed in our behavior, but how much has not changed in our fundamental wiring, if if you think of the difference between 200,000 generations and 600 generations to agriculture, we have deep, deep roots in animistic knowing, regardless of what kind of color of our skin or what part of the world we come from. If we trace it back, there are, you know, intact cultural roots, and it's more of a kind of dusting off than an learning some new skill. My friend and writer, Philip Shepherd, who I believe is a participant here, has written so eloquently about just the movement over time of consciousness centered in the body and how it has moved up to the head and the way that our language can shape our experience. And I think this is a really important thing to look at. And I highly recommend Philip's work. I highly recommend the work of David Abrams, and how much we can shape that sense of, you know, up as being good, down as being bad, light as being good, dark as being bad, and to start to get the value of going down and awakening that capacity again. So there was a friend and mentor, Russell Delman, who is the founder of the Embodied Life School, and has been a great teacher for me. And he was teaching a workshop one time, it was for Feldenkrais practitioners. And he said, often people will come into your office with three nouns, and our objective is to gradually ease those nouns into verbs, into relationship, into process. He said, there's a person with a body who has a problem. And that's a pretty common understanding for those of us in the body work. Or someone comes in, they're a solid person, they've got this solid body, there is this solid problem, like, oh, it's my psoas, or it's my quadratus lumborum, or it's my back pain. And the way that we can, those nouns can become so solid and impenetrable. And when we could soften them into living experience, when we can let them become process rather than solidity, then there's a whole different way of relating. And I want to read this other. This is a quote from Robin Wall Kimmerer from Braiding Sweetgrass. She writes, "The animacy of the world is something we already know, but the language of animacy teeters on extinction, not just for native peoples, but for everyone. Our toddlers speak of plants and animals as if they were people, extending to them self and intention and compassion until we teach them not to. We quickly retrain them and make them forget. When we tell them that the tree is not a who, but an it, we make that maple into an object. We put a barrier between us, absolving ourselves of moral responsibility and opening the door to exploitation." I think this is just so important. When we tell them that the tree is not a who, but an it, we make that maple into an object. We put a barrier between us, absolving ourselves of moral responsibility and opening the door to exploitation. So we can exploit the it of our psoas muscle and how we are with ourselves in movement. We can exploit the it of a tree or a river. But when we make it into this living relationship, then it invites more of respectful engagement. And this is where I think our movement can be so helpful. There's a great line from a Zen teacher, Sherry Huber, who writes, our self-hatred often uses self-improvement for self-maintenance. And that way that we can consistently be trying to improve ourselves in our movement, this kind of striving that often belies a sense of just wanting connection rather than improvement. And how can we relate to ourselves in a way that isn't constantly trying to fix or improve, but is more about inhabiting the living relationship and connections that are in there. So I want to do a little experiment around this and sensing how our bodies are not skin encapsulated. So if you sit and just close your eyes for a moment, let attention come down again to feel the support of the ground. And just imagine yourself now standing in front of the ocean. You can let the sounds, let the ocean spray, maybe the seagulls, but just feel, even in your imagination, when you bring the ocean into your awareness, do you feel the ocean in your body? Do you feel what changes in your breath? Not even being at the ocean, but just imagining it. What shifts for you? And then let that gradually fade. And then imagine that you are on a mountain with a vista. And feel yourself standing, feel the texture of the rock, feel the breeze, if you have a recollection of a certain mountain or hilltop that you've experienced before, and open out to feel how that is in your body, what's different from the ocean. Really let yourself drop into the sensory richness. How do you know mountain in your body? And then shift to imagine yourself in some sort of desecrated land. Could be a clear-cut forest. I remember once driving through a strip mine many years ago with my wife Erin, and it was so viscerally disorienting. But just for a moment, imagine a clear-cut forest, a strip mine, and notice yourself standing there. And in your imagination, how is that in your body? What happens to your breath? What happens to your sense of presence in your belly? And then just let that release. Come back to some, we'll get out of the strip mine, come back to the ocean or some place that you really love in the natural world. It could be a canyon you walk in, it could be a park in your city, and just feel how it is to inhabit that. And just in your imagination, how that lives in your body. This is a line from Jean Genlin, who created the beautiful system of embodied inquiry called the focusing method. Your physically felt body is, in fact, part of a gigantic system of here and other places, now and other times, you and other people. In fact, the whole universe. This sense of being bodily alive in a vast system is the body as felt from inside. And I would add to this, you and other people, and not just human people. You know, as so many traditions, earth-based, earth-honoring traditions will say, plant people and stone people and river people and mountain people and cloud people, that our physically felt body is a vast network of all of those coming together. I was watching a beautiful talk in the embodiment conference yesterday from Chokasen Ghost Horse, where he said, I highly recommend it. It's deeply moving in terms of how our language shapes experience. But he said, we noun everything to death. We noun everything to death. And what can happen when we take the livingness out of that relationship? And you know, when we recognize that we're in relationship both within our physical body, but in the outer world, how do we then function? How do we participate in those relationships in a respectful way? And I have found that just simple manners, you know, that we would model for our young son can be so helpful in this process. Just the ability to say hello. This is another practice from focusing or embodied listening that has been hugely helpful for me, is this way of just greeting what's happening, whether it's a back pain, whether it's an anxiety, whether it's an excitement, just to say like, oh, hello in there. I see you. I'm in relationship with you. And so often, you know, going back to that Shuri Huber quote around improvement, we greet what arises in here with a judgment, with a desire to fix, with a desire to improve. And so often what our body is craving is just to inhabit it, just to say, hello, I see you, I feel you. And the same thing can be true for the outer world. One of the kind of foundational animistic practices that Mary Oliver often embodies and suggests, and other teachers, is just to speak out loud. When you're in the garden, and this is something that we do each morning when we're sipping our coffee, like, oh, hello, mullein plant. Hello, bees that are swirling. Oh, hello, sunrise. To start to use your language to support the possibility that you're in a living relationship. And I think we all know how to be in relationship in a way that's satisfying. We know how to be in relationship with a partner. We know how to be in relationship with a child. And when we can bring that relationship to our broader field, and then we start to approach something like the common prayer of all my relations, this sense of embeddedness. So I'd like to pause there for a moment. I want to take, it's a good amount of words to start with, and I want to get this more in a direct bodily experience. But I would love to see if there are any questions with what comes up so far before we shift gears and pop into a little Feldenkrais lesson.
So Carl, we don't currently have any questions coming out from the group.
Okay.
I'm wondering myself, there's a poetic quality to the way that you share your embodied experience. And I'm wondering that relationship between word and movement, is that foundational for your practice, or is that something that emerges from it?
That's a good question. You know, I think when we have more flexibility in our language, we have more flexibility in our perception. And I think that that's sort of the role of the poets, is to point out what is often missing by conventional language and conventional understanding. And that's why, you know, the work of some of these people I've mentioned before, like, you know, Brooke McNamara, the poet laureate of the conference, or Philip Shepherd or Dave Abram, that it actually takes something to break out of the shell of all of those limitations that are embedded in our language, because our conventional speech will reinforce patterns of disembodiment, and our conventional speech will reinforce patterns of making the living world dead and an object. And so it does take a kind of poetic intervention to start to experience differently. Yeah, thanks for that.
There's a secondary question with that, which is, you spoke about nouns and the importance of those. And I'm wondering for people who are wanting to create more movement with their language and how that affects them, how would you give a gentle step for that?
Yeah, that's a great idea. So many indigenous languages have a very small percent of nouns and a large percent of verbs, a large percent of INGs at the end of whatever it is. Something that's becoming, something that's, and you see this in quantum physics, you see this in Buddhist notions of emptiness, that the solidity that we impose isn't really true. But in English language, we have the opposite. We have, it's like 70% nouns and a small percentage of verbs. So just to, one simple practice would be to add an ing onto any noun. Like right now, I am Carling. There's something that's unfolding. There's something that's in response to your question as you are Daviding, and all these other people are Zooming. So to just play with how can I de-solidify the sense of something that's solid, because that solidity also can then become the it, and it becomes kind of impenetrable, and we're not in that living relationship. And I think this, you know, the word that comes is a dance. Like when there's a dance, you can't be a solid noun. You have to be something that is responsive and moving.
That's tremendous. I just want to check, there have been two additional questions that have emerged. I want to check with the flow of the session whether you're happy to receive those.
Oh, I'd love to, yeah.
Perfect. So we have a question. How can you invite those who live in a more head-centered way to consider animism as a way to reinvigorate life?
Okay, let me just repeat that and see. How can people who live in a more head-centered way to invite it?
To use animism as a way to reinvigorate their lives. And how do you invite them to do that? So I suppose it's, how can we use your work to affect the people around us to come back into their bodies?
Yeah. Well, one, I think, is to just inhabit your body fully. That's, and to recognize that there are strong forces that will constantly pull us up in how we are, how the world is set up, how systems are set up. So it takes, I mean, and this has been the center of my life for 25 years, and I still, 100 times a day at least, need to put my hand on my belly, need to place a hand on my chest, need to refresh that connection with the ground. Likewise, there are many forces that will steer us in the direction, like we were talking about with conventional language, to see a tree as an inert thing, to feel, as we're going to get into the movement lesson, exploring our relationship with the ground, but to feel the ground as like dead stuff rather than living support of the earth. So I think finding simple practices that help to bring you back down and in, and particularly to the belly, particularly to the support of the ground, and making an investment in the possibility even that there are other forms of intelligence other than human intelligence.
And do you have any thoughts on whether names that we are given, forenames and surnames, are limiting us, and how we can get around that, if so?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question too. I mean, I think in traditional cultures, part of initiations and rites of passage would be that you'd be given a new name. You know, there would be something that acknowledges what your particular genius is, what your gift is, and your name would unfold around that. And we don't have that. And I know sometimes it can feel sort of strange when people will spontaneously change their name after, you know, ayahuasca retreat or something like that. But I think it's also, it's something to feel into, because there can also be really coherent shifts. Like, this name that I have is no longer matching my being and wanting to come up with something else.
That's perfect. There's a call for experiencing the embodiment
practices
in the room. So
yeah, let's do it.
We've got about 20 minutes for.
Okay, 20 minutes.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So I'm going to invite you to come to lie on your back. And if you're not in a place where that's possible for you, you can do this really in your imagination. But if you can, make yourself comfortable, lie on the floor. And you can have your legs long. If you need any kind of padding, like a yoga mat, you want to be comfortable with this. And I'll invite you to rub your palms together. Get your hands nice and warm. And then take your palms and cup them over the eyes. This can be such a powerful practice after being on many Zoom screens. And the way that our attention tends to be magnetized up in the sense of self that collects behind and within the eyes, and to really let the eyes feel the pull of gravity, to let the eyes soften, to let them take in that darkness and warmth of the palms. And while you're sensing the eyes, can you also feel into the space of your jaw, your lips, your tongue, your gums? Just feel if anything could be a little bit more spacious and open. And then let that release, let your arms come down. And I want to bring, this is another image from Russell Delman. And this was one of the most profound images that shifted for me in relation with the ground. So I'm going to invite you to imagine that you have a friend who is an elephant. And you know, if you have bad experiences, if you don't have a good connection with elephants, you can choose a whale or a dog. But imagine that there's this huge mammal, huge living being that just embodies all the goodness of connection that you've experienced with the natural world, with your partners, with your kids, with your friends. Like, when you're in the presence of this elephant, you just feel seen and cared for. And could you imagine that as you're lying here, you're actually lying on the back of this elephant, so that you feel an appreciation and that the elephant actually loves your weight, and that you could feel what's supporting you from the ground is care. That the ground loves you. There's this unconditional support. And again, for so long in human history, the earth was experienced and still is by many as Gaia, as this unconditioned support, where all of our food comes from, this living being. And yet for many of us, we have a sense of the ground as like this inert, you know, wood or carpet or whatever you're lying on. But what shifts if you imagine that it's alive and celebrating your support? So please bend your knees and reach your right knee up and just get hold of your right knee with both of your interlaced hands. So your left knee can stay on the ground, and you're going to lift your right knee up and just get a hold of it so that the back will lean a little bit more into the ground and start to just rock and let that right knee open to the right a little bit. So your head might roll a little bit to the right. You're not going for a big stretch, but just opening that right knee out to the right and tracing the movement of your weight as it rolls and sensing, you know, if you've ever done dance or theater or contact improv, could you feel yourself in relation to this living being of the ground? How the different parts of your head make contact, the different parts of your right shoulder gets a little heavier onto the ground. Just going back and forth gently and generously yielding your weight down. And then pause that and switch your feet. So let your right foot come down so that your right foot's standing flat on the ground. And lift your left knee off and your left foot off the ground. Interlace your hands and grab hold of your left knee just below your left kneecap and start to open out to the left. And as you slowly let the knee come out to the left and then back, can your attention primarily be on the shifting movement of weight against the floor? The back of your head, back of your shoulders, and this feeling of, oh, the elephant loves the weight of your right shoulder blade, loves the ribs. And for those areas back there to have this felt sense of being supported by the ground. Slowly let that come back and lengthen your legs down and just take a rest. I want to read another line by Robin Wall Kimmerer, whose book Braiding Sweetgrass I can't recommend highly enough. She writes, "Knowing that you love the earth changes you, activates you to defend and protect and celebrate. But when you feel the earth loves you in return, the feeling transforms the relationship from a one-way street to a sacred bond." I want to read that one again because it's a profound point. Knowing that you love the earth changes you, activates you to defend and protect and celebrate. But when you feel that the earth loves you in return, the feeling transforms the relationship from a one-way street to a sacred bond. So it's so important in these times where the earth, this larger body, is struggling and suffering, that we love it, that we offer our praise and our care. And then this next step, could we imagine that the earth loves us back? Loves us in the form of gravity. That gravity is this attraction between two bodies, two living bodies. In this wonderful conversation between Philip and Dave Abram a couple days ago, Dave was talking about the eroticism of gravity. And could you feel with this elephant the kind of erotic attraction that is pulling your unique body to the center of the earth right now? One more movement, bend your knees and bring your feet so that they're flat on the ground and start to just do a very gentle movement of lifting your pelvis up a little bit. So kind of like a bridging position, but you're not doing it as a back stretch or anything, but just seeing however far you could lift your pelvis up comfortably and letting the back have, as the weight moves up the spine, as you lift the pelvis and lower it, can you feel that support of the ground? This attraction between bodies. And what happens inside when we allow ourselves the possibility that you are loved by the support of the ground right now. Okay, and then let that pause and rest with your knees bent and place your hands on your lower belly, just below the navel, above the pubic bone. And as you breathe in, I'm going to invite you to imagine that there's like a balloon that could expand in each direction. As you take the breath in, you could inhabit the lower abdomen, and that there could be a gentle expansion forward towards your palms, downward towards your pelvic floor, backward towards your sacrum. And then exhaling, let that return to neutral. And just for a few breaths, allow your attention to be guided so you could sense that area of the hara, the lower belly, from within. And as this wild, unknown, uncolonized place in your own body. I often think of the hara as being like our miniature version of the earth inside. And as you expand, imagine at any tension, any numbness through the muscles of your pelvic floor, through the tissues of your low back, those could release and relax. And then could you shift and bring your hands to rest somewhere up on your chest, just on your ribs or sternum, and imagine a similar kind of a balloon that could expand in each direction. And it's not like a forceful pushing into areas, but it's like a three-dimensional yielding to the breath and to let your presence really inhabit that area directly from within. So often we can have a habit of being up in the eyes and sensing the hara or sensing the chest as down there. But could you sense it directly from within with your breath, so that as you breathe in, there's an expansion out to the side and the ribs, backward toward those kind of ropey muscles between the shoulder blades, forward toward your palms. As you're breathing into your chest, I'll offer this little Rilke gem. It's, yet no matter how deeply I go down into myself, my God is dark and like a webbing made of 100 roots that drink in silence. I know that my trunk rose from this warmth, but that's all because my branches hardly move at all near the ground and just wave a little in the wind. Now, take one hand on your chest and one hand on your belly and breathe into your lower abdomen and expand that three-dimensionally. And then hold the breath for a moment. And could you draw the belly in three-dimensionally and let that volume move up to your chest, and then pooch the belly out and let the volume move down to your belly. So it's like, and you're doing this on a held breath. You want to hold it gently so you're not clenching in your throat or anything. So you breathe down to the belly, hold the breath, let the jaw and the tongue be soft, and then draw the belly in, moving that volume up to the chest, moving your presence up to the chest, and then pooch the belly out. And just letting this inner space and volume be responsive to that movement, and do that a couple times, and then let the breath release. Take a normal breath for a couple times and then come back again, breathing to the belly, holding the breath, and going, drawing the belly in, pooching the belly out. And then let that release, let the legs lengthen down. So one of the things I really appreciate about the Feldenkrais perspective with the breath is that there's no sense of a particular pranayama or a particular way to breathe, but we want to allow the wild intelligence, the wild responsiveness of the breath to be there. So just notice after these little experiments of kind of expanding and pooching and then moving the volume up and down, if anything feels different in how the breath moves spontaneously right now, in the length of the breath or how it moves through the torso. And then please roll yourself onto your belly, onto your front side, and find a comfortable place where you can be on your belly. And just notice what it's like to give the front of yourself the support of the ground. Part of your face or your chest or your hands. And for a few breaths, as you breathe in, could you sense all those points of contact? The front of your legs, the front of your abdomen, genital area, chest. You could inhabit those with your inhale. And as you exhale, as though little tiny drain plugs were releasing from each of those areas, that you could fully yield yourself down. Again, like you're lying against this being that you care about, that supports you, that loves your weightedness, doesn't want you to be lighter than you are, doesn't want you to lift yourself away, that you could have this full generosity of your weight going down into the ground. And then very slowly from there, could you transition to bringing yourself up to standing? And as you come onto your feet, just place a hand on the front of your lower belly to rest, and take the other hand and take the back of the hand and find the place at the back, kind of the top of your pelvis, sacrum, just so you could cup the three-dimensional volume of that lower abdomen. And feel this relationship between your center of gravity, between your hands, this area of the hara, and the center of the earth, and that there's this attraction between them. And could you begin to shift your weight a little bit, feeling how your center is in relationship to that larger body on which you're standing? And then just let your hands relax and walk around a little bit and feel what it's like to walk, the sensitivity of your feet, the quality of your step, when you feel like you're stepping on the elephant's back, when you feel that the earth is alive under your feet. And this is a lot, the powerful invitation that the teacher Thich Nhat Hanh invites of each step, could we be kissing the earth with gratitude? Like, thank you, thank you. And then you can mosey yourself back to your seat or wherever you're watching this from. And let's see, David, if we could open up, if there are any questions or observations for these last few minutes together. I'd love to hear anything that you noticed in doing the movement, any questions that have come up so far through what we've explored.
So for those of you watching live, if you'd like to share in the chat any questions for Carl at this time. Just personally, Carl, I'd like to say just how presencing that felt, and to have so many separate parts of the body brought into presence, the front, the back, and the seating. Just you know, just aware personally that consciousness was, it felt hungry. I felt hungry for that and didn't realize it.
Yeah.
It's very calming.
Yeah. I mean, I often consider the, our connection with the ground almost like being like another joint, you know, like we have articulations all throughout, but that wherever we're interacting with the earth is, it's a very powerful connection to start to cultivate, both for our movement, but also for that sense of feeling like we're in relationship.
So there aren't questions coming up, and so at the moment I'm going to just transition to mention the next sessions. I've got to say, this is the most sedate I felt from being in the session. It's actually quite hard holding the hosting without just how relaxing that embodiment practice was. Thank you so much, Carl. That was really a delight.
So welcome.
I think the way you weave the words and body movement is quite a delight. Thank you.
Good, David. Well, it was a delight to be here with you.
So thank you so much. So that was Carl Rabicki presenting. Our next session in the Movement and Anatomy channel is Playing with Movement, How Simple Games Help Us Solve Complex Problems, with Todd Hargrove. And that's coming up in just over an hour. The link for the coffee break room is get shared in the chat. And if you want to go along there to continue to meet other people. And if you want to continue the discussion, you can head to the Embodiment Conference group on Facebook. The website for Carl is embodimentmatters.com, and that link will be shared in the chat just here. And I've been thoroughly enjoying this session and the wealth of content that's available here. And as I said at the beginning, the sessions are available for the next 48 hours free, and those are supported partly by the people that then upgrade to pay the reduced price during the festival to have longer term access to these, so we can digest that at our leisure. And that's part of the reason I volunteer, and I'm really looking forward to being able to look back at this session and revisit the practice again. Thank you, Carl. And I'm wondering if in the last couple of minutes you have any last words or a top tip for people to take forward into their day from your work.
Yeah, well, I think just not to underestimate how much can shift when we learn to move ourselves with more gentleness and care and compassion, and how that ripples out into this whole field of relations.
Thank you. There's a few seconds left, and there's another question that's just come up, but it might be a little bit oblique, which is, you mentioned Russell as important influence on you. Who is this?
I mentioned Russell Delman. He's a presenter in the conference. He created this Embodied Life School, and he and his wife Linda will be presenting at some point. I don't know exactly.
They presented yesterday. I hosted with their session. It was an absolute delight.
Yeah,
and there was a phrase that Russell used, which I thought was incredible, which was awakening as a revolutionary act. It just shivers down me, like hearing such powerful work. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you all. Thanks, Jeremy and David, for your support, and thanks to all you people out there here live and coming to the recordings. It's wonderful to be with you.
Thank you so much, Carl. And follow those links and rejoin us for our next session.